Well, last week we began a couple weeks series on called Embracing Change. And just to bridge the gap, last week we were talking about specifically the need for the church to be able to adapt in order to be effective in every culture and during every time period. So our church should be different in 2018 than it was in 1970. It should be different again in 2050. Churches in Texas probably do things a little different than we do to meet their culture. Churches in Winnipeg need to do things a little bit differently than we do to meet their culture. So we always need to be able to adapt to make sure that we're able to minister to whatever time frame we're ministering in and whatever community we're in. We don't ever change the product. There's never a reason to change the product. Our product is Jesus and salvation and love and redemption. The product is absolutely perfect the way it is. We never have to change the product. We're not allowed to change the message of the product. But the packaging, we talked about last week, has to be changed and updated. The way we deliver the product has to be changed or we're going to die. As we said last week, 4,000 churches in America close every single year. They close their doors never to be opened again. And thousands more than that are in decline. And many times, if you look at a common feature of churches who have died or are in a steep decline, it's because they refuse to adapt. They refuse to change the packaging. They refuse to update their programs or their facilities or just to be relatable to the culture they're in. Oftentimes, you know, church buildings, if you're not accustomed to coming to church, these things can look like walled castles, and you can feel like an outsider when you come in here, and you don't understand what's going on. And so the church has to make the gospel approachable to people. We're the welcome mat so people can be introduced to the Lord. And so when it comes to people's comfort zones, the church should be sacrificing what is comfortable to us to cater to what's comfortable to outsiders, so that they feel welcome, so they feel ministered to, so that we're speaking their cultural language, so that we can be effective. Our packaging in the church has to entice the people to try the product. So we always need to figure out how to best package the gospel in the way that is most relatable to the corner of the world that we're in. So as much as it's not always easy to hear about organizational changes, we're going to talk about something way worse today than organizational change, and that is individual change. And that is much harder than thinking about an organization changing. It's about thinking that we need to embrace change in our own hearts and our own minds so God can work in us as individuals. I'm assuming that everyone agrees with me when I say that we have to be able to adapt to our culture and change the packaging. If we don't, it's a guaranteed death sentence for any organization, not just churches. We talked about Sears and Blockbuster last week, too, who refused to change the way they did things because they thought they were going to be fine. And as the culture changed, they went out of business. And 32,000 churches in the last 8 years have closed their doors forever. So if you're not on board with that information, you really need to start by accepting that as a fact, that organizations that don't adapt to their culture are going to be left behind to die. But what are the odds that we can make an organizational change in the church if we are populated by individuals who think they don't have to make changes? An organization can never change. A church body can never change if it's inhabited by individuals who say, I don't have to change. I can keep going on the way I've always gone. So if individuals aren't willing to change, it can hold back the entire body. We all have to be willing to have our hearts and minds go under construction. We have to be willing to say, I can't just be stuck being the same person I've always been. I can't just get into a rut. And because making things new, if you read the Bible, is a pretty consistent part of God's methodology. If you read the Bible, he's always about making things new. Newness is a core value for God. In Isaiah 43:18, he says, forget the former things. Do not dwell on the past. See, I am doing a new thing. And primarily, the new thing that God wants to do is within us as individuals. The world gets changed as he changes individuals, and he starts with us. So we're going to begin today by looking at a parable that Jesus told. And it's in three of the Gospels, but we're going to read the one out of Luke today. And Jesus says this: "No one puts new wine into old wineskins, or else the new wine will burst the old wineskin and be spilled, and the wineskins will be ruined." That's in Luke 5, 36 through 39. Now, hopefully all of you recognize that a parable is a metaphorical story that is used to present a broader truth. Jesus, you can see it, he would teach in parables over and over again. He would take an example from his culture's everyday life, and he would say, this is what the kingdom is like. This is what God is like. This is what my will for you is. And he would use stories about seeds and farms and fish and things like that. He wanted to use something they dealt with in their everyday life to communicate eternal truths so they would understand it more. So in this parable, he's not giving us a best practice about how to produce and then transport wine. For any metaphor to work, though, we have to understand the context of the metaphor. So in Jesus' day, we need to understand that wine would have been an important staple of their diet. It was more sanitary than the water they probably had access to. It would have offered them some nutritional value. It had some medicinal value. It carried a social value. So when Jesus tells this parable, everyone would have been familiar with what he was saying because they'd have seen this in their culture. But for us, we don't really tote around things in wineskins. So when Jesus is talking about a wineskin was basically like a canteen that was made of sewn together animal skins. And so when they were new, the wineskins, they were pliable and they were stretchy. And so they would put their wine into it, the new wine. Now, the new wine was wine that was just starting the fermentation process. It had been pressed and crushed. And so the juices were just starting their fermentation processes. And so as the fermentation process is going on, there's chemical reactions going on. And it's giving out gases inside the wineskin. And so the wineskins needed to be able to expand and contract as all these chemical reactions are going on to be able to make sure that it was flexible enough to hold on to the fermentation process. But after this had gone on in the wineskins would then harden because of use. And so Jesus reminds people, he's like, if you take these hardened wineskins that aren't flexible, they're not pliable, and you try to put new wine into it, those same chemical processes that were fine in a fresh, flexible, pliable wineskin are going to burst your old wineskin. And then not only are you going to lose the wine, you're going to lose your wineskin because you're trying to put something new into something old. And you're just going to ruin both. And so Jesus, there's a little warning there about maintaining the packaging you like. Well, this is the wineskin I've already used. I'm used to it. But if you try to put the new into the old, you wind up losing them both. You don't preserve either. You lose them both. And so this parable is not meant to be an indictment of age. This is not just about things getting old and worn out and useless. This is a warning about what happens when we become rigid and inflexible and brittle and try to put newness into something that's not ready for it. Because God is about doing new things in our lives. So what happens to us when God tries to pour newness into a heart that is stubborn and rigid and inflexible and brittle? That person breaks. An old, rigid heart can't handle God's newness. Because God's plans, they're expansive, just like those gases. His plans cause a metamorphosis. That the grape juice is not the same as the wine that turns into. It's transformed into something else. And when you read the Bible, you just see this pattern of God asking us and urging us and sometimes giving us no choice but to change. And that process can cause us discomfort sometimes. There's a quote here by A.W. Tozer. I don't know if you ever, if you're looking for a new author to read, pick up some A.W. Tozer books. But he said one time, it's doubtful that God can bless a man greatly until he has hurt him deeply. Because that blessing process comes on the other side of God stretching us and pulling us and pounding us into something new. And that those times can be painful to us and uncomfortable to us. But it's because God is more interested into making us something useful than just making us comfortable and happy. We're going to look at a passage from Jeremiah in 18:1-6. It says this. This is the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord. Go down to the potter's house, and there I will give you my message. So I went down to the potter's house, and I saw him working at the wheel. But the pot he was shaping from the clay was marred in his hand. So the potter formed it into another pot, shaping it as it seemed best to him. Then the word of the Lord came to me. He said, can I not do with you as this potter does, declares the Lord? Like clay in the hand of the potter, so are you in my hand. Now, the process that the lump of clay has to go to through to become a vessel would probably be very painful if that lump of clay knew what was happening to it, wouldn't it? Because the first thing the potter does is he slams it down onto the tray to get it all loose. And then he puts the lump on the wheel and starts spinning it around. Imagine how dizzy the clay would be if it knew what dizziness was. Spinning around. And that's, you know, sometimes change feels dizzy because we don't know what's going on. We feel like we're not in control. We feel like we can't see well. We don't know what's up and down, do we? The process of change can be dizzying. While we're spinning, the potter is sometimes kneading us and pulling on us and stretching us. Sometimes the potter is taking out a knife and cutting chunks off of us. Sometimes he's carving things into us to make us into an ornate vessel. And then like in this story, when the clay isn't responding like the potter wants it to, when the clay is refusing to turn out to be the kind of vessel that the potter envisions for it, sometimes he has to start over with the whole painful process again until the pot responds to the potter's vision. And sometimes that makes me wonder, in the places of our lives where we're hurting, where we're feeling stretched, where we're feeling discomfort, are these the areas that God is trying to shape us into something better? And we're resisting him. Is there pain in certain areas of our life because God is trying to take us from being a lump into a usable vessel, and we keep resisting his change in our life because we're used to being a lump? We're satisfied being a lump. We're happy being a lump. So being stretched and changed and carved into something new, it can be a painful and uncomfortable process. And that may have nothing to do with the pain and struggle you're going in your life, but it might be worth asking, God, are you taking me through a tough time because you're trying to make me into something more usable and better? Because that could be happening. So what is God wanting to make new about us? 2 Corinthians 5:17 says this, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has passed away. Behold, the new has come. Now, when he says a new creation, what's he talking about? Because once I got saved, I did not look any better on the outside. Right? I didn't get baptized and suddenly I had six-pack abs when I came out of the water. My hair didn't grow back. He's talking about making us new on the inside, isn't he? Because God doesn't look at the outside like man does. So when he's talking about making us into a new creature and into a new creation, he's not changing the way we look. He's not changing necessarily the way we dress or the kind of haircuts we have. He's talking about changing the inner man to reshape that inner man from being a lump into a usable, beautiful vessel, into a piece of art. That's why he's stretching us and cutting us and pulling us. So the Bible indicates that he's really about changing our hearts and our minds. So we're going to briefly look at those two things. First of all, he's going to give us a new mind. Now, a new mind gives us a different belief system. It gives us a different worldview. A new mind allows us to see our circumstances differently. It allows us to see ourselves in the world and what our place is in the world differently. It allows us to see our neighbors differently. And it gives us the ability to make different decisions that we couldn't make with our old mind. Paul writes this in Ephesians 4. So I tell you this and insist on it in the Lord that you must no longer walk as the Gentiles walk in the futility of their mind. They are darkened in their understanding, excluded from the life of God because of the ignorance that is within them. So when I start looking at that verse, it says a couple things about the old mind that we can fall back into, but also the people who haven't been introduced to the Lord yet are stuck in. And when we see people who are making bad decisions over and over again, we shouldn't hate them for it. We shouldn't judge them for it. We need to reach out and love them for it. In it. We need to be extending ourselves to people who are stuck with their old mind. Because it says their thinking is futile, which means their thinking is unstable. And it's empty and it's without purpose. They don't even know why they're doing the things they're doing. They're just roaming through lives, doing what they want sometimes. The Bible says that they're darkened, which it's the same word that they would use to say that they're blind. Now, I don't know if any of you would ever deal with a blind person. Would you be mad at them because they couldn't see? Would you think they're stupid because they're bumping into things? No. But sometimes we can look at other people who are blind, who are stumbling in this world, and we can look down on them for it. Well, they don't have another choice. When people are in the darkness, when people are blind, they don't have another option but to stumble. We need to be compassionate for those people. The Bible says that that mind leaves you excluded because it leaves you isolated from God. It leaves you isolated from your Creator. It ultimately makes you have a loneliness that you try to fill up with other things. When people get lonely because they don't have God, they build a new God. We all have gods in our lives. But when you don't have the living God, you find something else to be your God. And it says that they walk in ignorance, which doesn't mean they're stupid at all. It just means they are without the knowledge they need. But this doesn't just apply to people who are lost. This says we can slip back into these things, or we can hold on to these things. If you are so bent on holding on to your old mind, holding on to your old way of thinking, holding on to your old way of doing things, then you're going to be stumbling around too. We have to be willing for God to put newness into our minds so that we can think differently, so that we can see things differently, so we can evaluate what's going on around us differently, and so finally we can make decisions to do things differently. Not just know things differently, but to do things differently. And then secondly, God is going to give us a new heart. Now, our heart is really where we think about where we're giving our affections to. How we love God, how we love others depends on what our heart is like. How we respond to our emotions, how we respond to our senses, all has to do with the condition of our heart. And we've talked about it dozens of times here, but we're going to keep doing it because our culture keeps promoting the opposite, but The worst thing you can do when you're making a decision is to follow your heart. Even though it winds up in every love song, it winds up in every Disney movie, that's how you make decisions, you just follow your heart. An unregenerate heart is about the most untrustworthy organ that you can ever think about when you're going to make a decision. Jesus said, "For out of the heart comes evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, lies, and slanders." Why would we ever take the advice of an organ like that? If you know a person who does all these things, if you knew a person who was a murderer, an adulterer, a thief, a liar, a slanderer, would you ask them for advice when you had a decision to make? Would you follow them? Well, Jesus says this is what your heart is like. You don't want to follow your heart in that kind of state. You need a new heart. And luckily, God said he's willing to do that. In Ezekiel, it's written, "I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you a heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh." So God is wanting to take us from being a hard-hearted person to a soft-hearted person. From being a person who is self-centered to be a person who is caring about others first. He wants to take us from being a person who loves ourselves the most to loving God and our neighbors the most. Our new hearts should be prompting us to consider what is better for others, not what's just better for me. We're going to be talking in sometime in the future about our love languages and how we're supposed to learn to love each other in a way that it's understandable and relatable to each other. Part of that is it means we're looking beyond people's behavior and looking at what is causing their behavior. It's about investing in people's lives and understanding what's behind the good and bad decisions that they're making. But it also means we're ready to bear one another's burdens. It means we're ready to forgive one another in a proactive way. Jesus is planning on making, when he's making us new, he's going to make us new in our hearts and our minds. That's what makes us a different person. Changing our clothes doesn't make us a different person. Changing our jobs doesn't make us a different person. Changing our hairstyles doesn't make us a different person. Singing in church or attending church doesn't make us a different person. But a transformation of our heart and mind makes us into a new creature that's completely different than the old creature. I mean, the people who knew you before Christ and after Christ ought to be able to tell you're a new creature now. I shouldn't just look like a diet version of the person that I was before I was following Jesus. I ought to look like a totally new creature to them. I shouldn't just be polished up a little bit. You know, God is not about just putting shoe polish on us. He's not just about, hammering a few dents out of us. The Bible is talking about making us brand new creatures who live and think and act totally different in the world than we used to. And if we're still trying to hold on to our old self over and over again, we are never going to be able to receive God's newness. It will burst our lives just like those wineskins. So we have to be ready to make ourselves pliable and stretchable and bendable and moldable. Because if God keeps having to put us through this process, it's painful for us over and over again. It's a lot easier on us if we just submit to God when he's trying to change us in the first place. And sometimes God asks people to do things that seem completely irrational and completely crazy to their friends and their families and the culture around them. But I asked it last week, and I don't know if any of you looked it up, but can you think of one story in the Bible where God says, I'm going to bless you as long as you maintain the status quo. And I'm going to bless you as long as you just sit still and don't do anything. I'm going to bless you as long as you never stretch yourself. I'm going to bless you just as long as you don't rock the boat. I never see that promise offered. Every time he grows somebody, every time he blesses somebody, he puts them through things that are uncomfortable for them. That's the process of going from a lump of clay into a usable, beautiful vessel. There's stretching, there's carving, there's cooking. But if we stay a lump of clay, if we resist God and stay that lump, we're never going to be the thing that we were meant to be. So as the worship team leads us in the last song, I'm just going to ask you to be communicating to God that we're willing to change, that we're not going to be just digging in our heels. We're going to be moldable, we're going to be changeable, and we're going to be submissive to God.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now